So I'm thinking going again for Mark Walsh. And they put the three in second. That's Recite a Prayer. This is a bit undercooked compared to some of the others. Handicapped debutant for Willie Mullins.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. A little bit later on, after the big day at Aqueduct yesterday with the Cigar Mile, Demoiselle, Remsen, Go for One, invited Dave Grenning, the New York correspondent for the Daily Racing Form, to join us. He will do that in a few minutes and help us recap that big action down in New York yesterday. In the meantime, we'll take a look at some of the other stakes action from yesterday and maybe hit on some other news and notes as well. But do want to remind you, as always, on this. Oh, first, I want to remind you that we want to thank our friends down at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during the championship meet. We appreciate the support of Gulfstream Park. They kicked off the championship meet on Friday, claiming crown down there yesterday. So the action is already underway for the championship meet down at Gulfstream. also want to remind you that, as always, throughout the NFL season, you can stop here at the Clubhouse Racebook and enjoy football and racing action right here at the Racebook. Put your name on a square. Maybe you win a jersey or a food voucher. That's always a lot of fun. But you can come down and see all the football and all the racing every Sunday throughout the season. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. If you've never been, today's the day. Come on down. We're right around the corner from Everett Road. If you're on I-90, hop off Everett Road, go over to Central Avenue, boom, take a left, and we are right there. So very convenient, conveniently located to everything in the Capital District. Clubhouse Racebook, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. Also do want to note, coming up on Friday, it's going to be the grand opening of Tobacco Island down in Cohoes. So keep that in mind as well. There will be an event going on between 1 and 5, vouchers and food and whatnot. That comes up on Friday. We were there about 2 weeks ago, I guess, for kind of the quote-unquote soft open, Remsen Street in Cohoes. It's super convenient. It's 30 seconds off 787. There's plenty of street parking. There's a little parking lot about two doors down. So if you're in the Cohoes area and you're looking for OTB action, the easy bet at Tobacco Island. And again, they're open. They're up and running, but the official grand opening will happen this coming Friday. We'll alert you more to that as the week progresses. All right, let's take a look at some of the action yesterday from Tampa, because they had a couple nice, couple fun little two-year-old stakes races. And I kind of hit on them during the afternoon yesterday on OTB Live, because I always like to look at the two-year-olds this time of year. And I was excited to see how the Sandpiper was going to play out. That was for the two-year-old fillies. And Mark Cassie brought Strategic Bird over from the east coast of the state. Strategic Bird had won career debut at Gulfstream middle of November. Strategic Bird's the number one. Divine Charger is the number two, coming in off a close-up finish at Churchill a few weeks back. And I have said that fall Churchill meet for two-year-olds is very salty. So Divine Charger was also interesting. But Strategic Bird, off a big debut win, you can see maybe getting a little short late as Divine Charger was making up a little bit of ground. But she was just dug in and really looked good there, I thought. And I haven't pulled up and seen any numbers yet. Love to see the number on that and see what she did. Maybe I can quickly go to the usual suspects here and see if I can. Sometimes on Sunday morning, the numbers are already out, sometimes not so, but let me just see, because I would love to see if there was a, if there were numbers out yet. Well, there are some numbers for New York, but not seeing numbers on the Tampa races yet. But that said, Strategic Bird looked very good, and I said it yesterday. I don't know, you know, you have a talented two-year-old, and as they become three-year-olds, maybe you try to stretch them out. I'm not sure, given, as they say, she was maybe coming a little short at the six furlongs yesterday, but now 5.5, really big debut win, 6 furlongs and a stake, 2 for 2 for Mark Cassie. Divine Charger, I think, is a talented potential little two-year-old filly sprinter, too. And again, it's only a few weeks before they all turn three. But Strategic Bird looking pretty good in the Sandpiper for Mark Cassie with now, again, the 2 for 2 record. All right, let's look at the two-year-old boys. Going into the Sandpiper, and I said it yesterday, I was excited to see, was Strategic Bird going to validate what we saw? And so she had the potential to be something special. You look at the two-year-old boys field in the inaugural, and I don't know if there's anyone in that field that was quite, you know, jumping off the page like that. And not sure coming out of the race whether that, you know, anybody jumped off the page either. Catton is going to win nicely here by a margin of just over 2 lengths. Catton came in with a debut win, but for a claiming tag, and then tried a couple of stakes over at Gulfstream, ran fourth and ran third for Ralph Nix. But yesterday, Sammy Camacho on board, and certainly at Tampa, that's a bonus. And as I say, wins by a couple of lengths. Lightning Larry runs second. Grand Valley runs third. But again, I'm not sure any of these were coming in as superstars. I don't know whether they went out as superstars. And I'm just looking at the times. The time for the Philly race was fractionally actually better than the boys' race. So again, Strategic Bird coming out of the Sandpiper on the Philly side, a little more intriguing going into the three-year-old season in a few weeks than maybe the winner of the inaugural. But as again, always fun to watch the two-year-olds this time of year. Over at Oaklawn, we had the Mistletoe. It was three-year-old fillies going a mile and a 16th. I liked Willful Woman from Steve Asmussen, went off as what, the third choice at 7-2. Disappoints a little running fourth. Mariah's Princess, I didn't use, the number 8 horse. But the betting public made that one the second choice at 2-1. Amendment 19 was the 8-5 favorite and winds up running second here, the number 9 horse. But a clear victor in Mariah's Princess. Could be an interesting 4-year-old, as this is a lightly raced 3-year-old filly. Came into the race 2 wins and 5 starts, and now 3 for 6, including a nice stakes victory at Oaklawn yesterday. We'll see, you know, what her game plan is. This was a mile and a 16th over the Oaklawn Strip. Does she continue and, you know, head into something like the Apple Blossom later? But again, she very lightly raced, 3 wins and 6 starts. So nice performance yesterday from Mariah's Princess. And finally, we'll take a look at Los Alamitos yesterday and the Starlet. Again, always like to look at the two-year-olds this time of year. These are two-year-old fillies. And surprise, surprise, it's Bob Baffert with Edda or Ida, the number 6 horse here. Wins by a half a length as the short-priced favorite. Came into this race with 3 wins and a 2nd in 5 career starts. One of those wins was the debut victory by DQ, but it had come under the wire first, and pretty convincingly first in the 2 races prior to this, both stakes races, one at San Anita, one at Del Mar, and now winds up winning the Starlet at Los Al. And of course, for years, this was held over at Hollywood, was one of the top races for two-year-old fillies at the end of the year. And I pulled it up, Daily Racing Form article by Steve Anderson, Bob Baffert. Yeah, record equaling 8th career win in the Starlet for Baffert. So, as I say, surprise, surprise, Bob Baffert taking the Starlet at Los Al yesterday, and Edda, a 2-year-old filly to keep our eyes on potentially. I just wanted to touch on that triple carryover pick 6 yesterday. Paid out $2,500, really hittable. I had the last 4 winners, the pick four stakes. I had them all top picks. They were you know, clearly very playable. And I, were they all favorites? Mo Donegal was the second choice. Other than that, they were favorites. But again, those were all very playable, and that pick four didn't pay anything, paid $2,900. The two horses that started the sequence, first off, you got a Chad Klarowicz, first-time starter, that paid $18. That adds some nice value, but clearly very playable. And then Carpe's Diem wins the second leg of yesterday's triple carryover pick six at $14. But again, that was a very playable horse, too. So if you got through those first two legs, then it became super logical. And for a buck, you got $2,500, almost $2,600. But the great thing about that, it got spread all over. On the big carryover days or mandatory pay days, I love it when something like that happens, as opposed to, you know, three impossible horses and it pays $80,000 and goes to a bunch of people who put together, you know, $900 tickets. This had to go get spread out, and I'm sure there was a number of people who put together maybe 48, 60 something, maybe $100 for a ticket and wind up walking away with almost $2,600. So it's kind of fun to see the sequence wind up like that after that triple carryover, because I'm sure all those people, all those little guys put in money that built that carryover up over 3 days. So it's nice to see it spread out over many, many people. All right, we'll take a break. As promised earlier, we will be joined by Dave Grenig, New York correspondent for the Daily Racing Forum. When we come back, take a look at some of that stakes action yesterday at Aqueduct. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Dave Grenig from the Daily Racing Forum to talk a little New York action after the big day yesterday. Dave, good morning.
Hey, Seth, good morning.
Before we talk the racing yesterday, as I was driving in, I was curious and I thought I would ask, have you caught a game yet at the new arena over at Belmont?
I have. I've actually caught two. I was there for the opening night, and then I was there for the Rangers game on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It's a beautiful facility. Sitting there, I was kind of bemused by the fact that, you know, thinking about this is in the backyard of Belmont Park, because it's so big. Once you're inside, but it's a very nice facility. I'm sure they have some parking issues to work out. It's a good thing that there's really no conflict between racing and hockey at the moment. I think by the time that there is the two ventures going on, the parking garage that is currently under construction in the south lot will be completed, so that should help somewhat.
Oh, so they're adding to parking. I'm assuming they share parking with the racing facility, right?
On the side closest to the building, there is, you know, most of those lots that, you know, people know as the silver. Actually, I guess it still is the silver lot. It's been repaved and it's being used for sort of premium parking. Then, you know, if I'm sure if those who have watched who did watch Belmont, when you saw the pan shot of those down the backside, you saw parking spaces behind like the 5/8 pole. That is called the Emerald Lot. That's one, there's a lot of people parked there. That's one that's a little tough to navigate in terms of once you get out, you know, getting out of the lot. Once you get out, it dumps you off right on the cross island, so it's good. It's just getting to that point, which was a little difficult. But again, those were two of the first three games. Maybe they've ironed some of that out by now.
And you say you were there for opening night. Was opening night, I saw it on Twitter, they gave the little honor and put John Velasquez up. He was attending. They put him up on the big board.
They did. You know, he was one of the quote celebrities that was in attendance for opening night, and they showed him winning the Belmont on Union Rags. I think he might have got a bigger ovation. Not that he didn't get an ovation, but he might have got a bigger one if they showed him on Rags to Riches.
Yeah, it was fun to see on Twitter though that they kind of looked at the crossover on the horse racing and the hockey on opening night. But it's good to know that. Facilities now open and doing well. All right, let's jump into it. And again, before we get to the individual races, I'll ask an overarching question. I was sitting in here doing the handicapping show yesterday, and by the end of the day, it was a little bit amazing. I'm sure it's happened, I guess, but I couldn't think of four straight races that went to the stewards' booth, and much less four straight stakes races, and that's the way it played out yesterday. So that was a little bit intriguing. It added some drama after they came under the finish line in all four of the stakes yesterday.
Yeah, like my mentor and the late, great Joe Hirsch said, everything's happened once, but I do not recall this happening before, at least in my coverage, of four consecutive state-graded stakes where there was an inquiry / objection. You know, a couple of them were more of the frivolous side, but there were two legitimate ones, and you know, I guess people can debate the Remsen and probably will debate the Remsen, but, you know, they let everything stand. There were no disqualifications. But, oddly, two of the regular stewards were not in the stand yesterday. So that added even more. You know, you wonder if the regular stewards were in there, if there would have been any changes.
Yeah, interesting. I also looked at, because they do have stewards' decisions on the NYRA website now, and I looked, and they only had one of the races listed, which I thought was kind of funny, because I was curious. I think there was two trainers' objections, but I wasn't clear on the second one. But the first one we'll get to. Let's take a look at the Gopher one, and I know Chad Summers did claim here, and I don't really blame him, because as we'll see in the pan shot, Chad Summers had Truth Hurts, the number six horse. And it does look on the pan shot like maybe he gets bothered. But Lady Rocket is just a phenomenal winner here. Really impressive as the 6-5 favorite. Bella Vita runs second. Truth Hurts runs third. And as I say, it looked like maybe there was something there in the pan shot. But once you looked at the head-on, immediately you realized there was nothing there. So I don't really blame so much the trainer, because I'm sure his was based on watching the video. And with the quick officials now, you can't really wait to have your jockey come back to talk to. So I don't blame them, but once they looked, they made the right decision here. All of that said, big performance from Lady Rocket, the Brad Cox trainee.
Yeah, you know, when you stretch horses out to a distance they haven't run at before, it's always a question mark. I mean, she's handled the 7/8 with no problem, but it's not a given that they get the mile. But she got it with, you know, pretty much ease. And, you know, and Rod Ortiz thought a smart race, because he thought that, you know, the way to get her to get the mile was to get her relaxed, and the way to get her relaxed was to keep her sort of away from the other horse that was battling with her on the lead. So if you watch the head-on there, she's like, you know, the 5 or 6 path down the backstretch, and Miss Marissa's on the inside, and it wasn't until, like, you know, they made the run into the turn that he guided her over, and by that point, you know, he just had so much horse that it really wasn't going to matter. I don't know. Maybe at first glance, Chad Summers might have saw something, but it wasn't any, you know, it was one of those deals where, okay, you looked at it and you quickly dismissed it as is. It didn't really cause any delay or consternation. I don't think that one, it didn't even make the chart, believe it or not. But no, Lady Rocket was much the best, and it gives Brad Cox something to work with down the road, you know, for her, you know, I guess 5-year-old year in 2022, because knowing that she can get up to a mile and handle the one turn, you know, you could start to maybe even stretch her out to a mile 16th in one turn races at Belmont. My guess is she had a busy campaign, especially late campaign in 2021. I guess she'll get a nice rest and, you know, probably show up somewhere in Keeneland in the spring, like if they get the Madison or something like that. So maybe see if she can handle the grade one competition. But she was very good yesterday.
Yeah, very good. And I think I actually also have a buyer here for her. She won
106.
Yeah, 106 buyer there. So that was impressive as well. Let's turn the page.
I mean, she ran faster. She did run, you know, a little bit faster, 0.16 seconds faster than American Revolution in the Cigar Mile.
Yeah, so it was definitely an impressive. And as you say, stretching out, you don't know, but she does it successfully. Because we're going to take a look at the Remsen in a second, and again, Irad is going to be involved there a little bit. So before we do that, I'll go back. Will the stewards look at the situation from Thursday? Because, you know, Irad got the DQ on Thursday where the jock was dumped from his horse. And that had the look of maybe some days for Irad.
Oh, it has to be. Again, I believe that happened Friday. And this, you know, usually it's the day after that the stewards have a meeting. They call it movies with the jocks. But as I mentioned, two of the regular stewards were not there yesterday. I think that's been delayed till today. In fact, I think it might actually even be via conference call with IRAD, because I believe IRAD, along with Luis Saez and Jose Ortiz, are in Puerto Rico today riding at some of the big races, Carrero
right.
Racetrack. So I think that might be done by a sort of a conference call. Maybe the Zoom is now in vogue, so maybe they might be doing something there. I have to think he was going to get days, and a lot of them, at least he should. That was egregious.
Yeah.
You know, people will debate the Remsen yesterday, but there's no debate from that incident on Friday. That was bad.
No.
And look, I don't view Irad as a dirty rider. I just think that was a bad situation. I'm not sure what he was thinking. Glad that Omar Moreno is fine, but that could have got ugly.
No, you can argue yesterday was a little bit of race riding, and that 2 days ago was just a mistake. I mean, he took a left turn out of the gate and just cut the horse off, and it was a dangerous situation. So interested to see how that's going to play out. But again, now we'll take a look at the Remsen, where there was a look at it, and there was some consternation, and there was a little race riding going on. We're going to look at the number one, Mo Donegal, getting it done under Irad Ortiz. Makes it tight for number seven, Zandon. Stewards took a look and then made no change. Midnight Chrome will finish third. All of that said, and, you know, the folks debating the situation, we come out of this with a couple of two-year-olds who now have some promise going forward. They both wind up coming out of this race with 89 buyers. But stretching out to the mile and an eighth late in the two-year-old season will play into an interesting three-year-old season for both of these horses.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of upside for both horses, especially Zandon, when you consider that he had the 1 6-furlong race in his life, missed the Nashua in early November due to a temperature, and so was stretching out off 1 6-furlong race to a mile and eighth. Looked like he was going to get passed quite easily by Mo Donegal inside the furlong pole. And he fought back. I mean, it wasn't a situation where, you know, Mo Donegal may have, you know, idled a tick, but, you know, also maybe not. I mean, Zandon really fought back along the inside, and there was some race riding going on. And I guess the one thing that I didn't pick up initially but then saw in the replay was sort of Irad going and with an exaggerated motion. Looks like he was rowing a boat. If you watch the head-on, I'm sure it's been on Twitter, you know, he's sort of, you know, with the reins just sort of really going to an exaggerated motion where his elbow, you know, debatable, but I thought maybe grazed the head of Zandon. And, you know, don't know if it was necessary to do that or not. But, you know, a lot of times the riders want to bring their horses over to see the other riders thinking they will embolden them. I saw some talk yesterday, well, why didn't he just stay down the middle of the track? Well, you know, if you don't see a horse, you may not fight. So you bring the horse over to see the other horse to sort of get him, to embolden him to finish. And I think that's what he was doing there. You know, it's debatable, and I could see people leaning over to the side where he crossed the line. And I guess if Johnny had sort of done an exaggerated check, like pulled the horse, you know, just steadied out of there, then he might have been able to sell it a little better. And why you should have to do that, I don't know. But, you know, Johnny didn't stop riding. He didn't really sell it with that situation. Kind of interesting here, and I'm not – I probably shouldn't even bring this up, but I'm not saying anything happened here, but – you know, Irad in that case is riding for Todd. Johnny's riding for Chad. Really, it's Chad usually has Irad, and Johnny usually is riding for Todd. But, you know, anyway, in terms of moving forward, the thing that's very noteworthy here is they were almost 10 lengths clear, 9 3/4 lengths to be exact, of the rest of the field. So the fact that that's in play, I think, stamps these two, you know, better than the sort of the regular Remsen, because we really haven't seen the Remsen produce much for a long time. But these two sort of stamp themselves as horses to follow. They're both going to have to improve. All these two-year-olds turning three are going to have to improve. But I think Todd and Chad both have something to work with here as they get into their three-year-old year. And in talking to both this morning, and look, things can change between now and March 5th, but both sort of had the Fountain of Youth penciled in for these horses, which I believe is March 5th. I think I looked that up, as sort of maybe the starting point for their three-year-old campaigns. Now, again, things can change. Horses miss time. Other races look more attractive when you start to think about it. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that these two make their three-year-old debut against each other in the Fountain of Youth on March 5th at Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, and I'm just, as you brought it up, I'm kind of looking at Remsen winners, because you're right. You think a mile and an eighth at the end of the season, and it's going to play into the Kentucky Derby. And in recent years, it hasn't necessarily. But, boy, it is a pretty good – you go down the list there, and certainly if you go back a ways, Tockett, who I think got – ripped off of a two-year-old, Eclipse is on the list going back to 2002. But then you go back further, and there's horses like Thunder Gulch and Gopher Gin and Pine Bluff and whatnot, Java Gold in there. So it is a race that historically has been very intriguing from two-year-old to three, and I think this year may play out the same. And just before we move on, I'll go on, because reading your article here, Zandon, it sounded like Chad Brown was not happy at all after the race with the Stewards' decision.
He wasn't. Went to see him again this morning, and you know, I think what he's taking the approach that he's just going to turn the page and try and take the high road for multiple reasons. And I just think you know, he's going to be happy that the fact that he's got something to work with and look ahead instead of looking behind. But yeah, he does think the horse should have come down, Modonegal, that is, should have come down. But I think the fact that he ran that horse ran as well as he did, going from, as we said before, 6 furlongs to a mile and eighth, you know, he's happy that he's got this horse to work with. And really, my guess is I'm pretty sure this is his main threat for the Derby. I know people are all, you know, look at Jack Christopher as that type, but who won the Champagne. But that horse, you know, needed surgery after getting scratched in the Breeders' Cup. And you know, I never really thought that the horse was a mile and a quarter horse, and I actually think they'll take their time getting him back to the races, and you'll probably see him in, you know, probably more of one turnish type races in as a three-year-old, I think.
And interesting on that note, I pulled up the odds to the Derby future pool that closed last weekend, which is way too early for me. But favored last week was Smile Happy coming out of that win down at Churchill. But Jack Christopher, and that one was 8-1. Jack Christopher was 10-1. But for folks who are a little prescient as far as waiting a week, Zandon was 56-1, and Mo Donegal was 37-1. So folks who maybe picked up those two were happy after the weekend with the results yesterday. All right, let's go to the Demoiselle, the two-year-old fillies, and Nest for Todd Pletcher was the 8-5 favorite. Nest does get it done, but just barely in here. Venti Valentine ran very big, I thought. Magic Circle runs third, but Nest now 2 wins and 3 career starts. Buyer figure was kind of an anemic 76, so I'm not sure this race is going to prove to be as strong turning the page to three-year-olds as the boys' version was, but Nest does get it done in a ding-dong battle yesterday.
Yeah, I think where you give Nest some added points in terms of just the performance was how wide she was. I mean, this is going to be one of those sheep player dreams, you know, horses. The time was, you know, slow. It was second and a half, I think, slower than the Remsen. But she was 4-5 to maybe 6 wide most of the trip. And, you know, in the stretch, the reason there was an inquiry here, I think, was because Magic Circle, the pace setter, kind of came out under Manny Franco's left-handed whip, and then sort of Venti Valentine shied away from that, and maybe bumped with Nest. If Magic Circle had finished ahead of Venti Valentine, you might have been able, you could have made a case for a potential DQ there. But since Venti Valentine finished ahead of Magic Circle, there was no need. But I know the race was, the time was slow, and, you know, the margin of victory was narrow. But I thought it was a pretty good performance for Ness, and I would give her, you know, some if she can make the development from 2 to 3, at least we know she can get a mile and an eighth. And I was kidding with Todd this morning; we might know she can get a mile and a quarter because she really was wide all the way around yesterday. And Benty Valentine, I want to give her a little credit. There's a filly, New York bred filly, who, you know, has a bright future too. I'm sure they'll take some shots in the open company races, but you know, at the very least, they know they have a talented filly for some of those New York bred 3-year-old stakes early and into the middle of next year.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they both look good. And speaking of New York breds, I always bring it up when I talk to New York breds. I go back to where I think it all turned was when Fiorito broke through the gate and then went on to win the Whitney. And it changed from the old New York bred to the new New York bred, and they have just gotten better and better over the years, evidenced by the results in yesterday's Cigar Mile. New York bred American Revolution steps into grade one open company against older horses and a pretty salty group of older horses. And I will tell people, American Revolution is the number three here. And I commented right after the race yesterday when I was in here doing OTB Live. Luis Saez is really working on the horse to the point where you think, oh, I don't know if American Revolution is going to have enough in the stretch. You can see him really pumping and driving as they come around the far turn here and into the stretch. But when American Revolution gets going, he gets going and goes by big victory over the other Pletcher runner following seat. Plainsman third, Olympiad runs fourth in here, and it's a 104 buyer for American Revolution. But you noted it in your article as well. He really had to work, but gets up for the victory. And I thought, again, this was impressive for the three-year-old stepping into a salty grade one.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure that he wants to do the mile, you know, or that's his best game. I think he's, you know, the one turn, you know, when he won the Empire Classic, that's a mile and an eighth one turn. It was also, you know, lesser company and sloppy track. He just handled it all really well. But Luis Saez said around the 3/8 ball, the horses sort of came off the bit a little bit. That's when you see him start to really get into him rigorously, and you wonder if he's going to, you know, pick it back up and get there. And he did. I mean, I think he's a pretty gutty horse. You look at his form. I mean, even go back to his very first race when he was with Rudy Brissett. He ran fourth to Mandaloo. I mean, Mandaloo is, you know, albeit via this, you know, the steward stand, he's a multiple grade one winner, or could be. And that's a solid horse. That sort of showed his quality. He won a New York bred maiden race going three quarters by a neck, but once they got him out in distance, he really showed himself. He sort of has the gutsy, you know, a little bit of guts that the Constitution had, and so that his sire. It was a really solid effort, and even by following Z, who I wasn't sure would be successful stretching out to the mile, and he really handled it well, especially coming off a Breeders' Cup sprint race where he ran terrific. He just got shut off a little bit. Sometimes these Breeders' Cup horses, they come back, and it looks like it's an easier spot than the Breeders' Cup. It usually is, and they just don't fire at all, but he did, and I give him a lot of credit. But you know, American Revolution, what a bright future. You know, if same ownership as Life Is Good and Trainer, so I don't think, you know, it's not like they're going to sit there and look at the Pegasus. In fact, I think the horse is on his way to Windstar Farm this week for a break. But you'll see him in some significant races next year, no doubt.
Yeah, as they say, also big for the New York bred program. He just looked fabulous yesterday. You said you talked to Todd today. I'm curious, did he have any comment about the situation of having to not just come under the finish line first, and there were some ding-dong battles there. You had to sweat out photos and whatnot, but then having to wait out three straight stakes races to get wins in the, you know, with no decisions up in the stewards booth.
Well, I don't think he was too concerned about the Demoiselle. The Remsen, he sort of played it coy a little bit. And in this race, the Cigar Mile, he was like, well, if I got taken down, I still would have won it anyway, because probably see what he got put up.
Yeah, that's true. He was going to get it one way or the other in the Cigar Mile. But man, it was just a great way of winding up the big stakes season down in New York. There was drama all around. There were great performances. And I'll also add, I said it at the top of the show, with the triple carryover, I love the way it played out. $2,500. The first two winners you had to search maybe a little bit, but they had a Chad Klarovich firster, and that was playable. You got $18. Carpe Diem, maybe, but that horse was playable. But then Logical in the next four, And so $2,500, I think a lot of people who played very reasonable tickets walked away happy with some money. And I love to see that on those big carryover days.
True. No question, although I did see some of the guys who really delve into the numbers, you know, talk about how usually on a day like this, it pays better than the parlay. And on this particular day, it did not. I think part of that was that Chad Torres, while 8-1, you know, on the odds board for a win bet, was certainly probably half that price.
Yeah.
In the pick six. I mean, who's not going to throw a Chad Furster in the first leg of a pick six? And then, you know, like you said, the stakes were pretty logical performances. I mean, you could have made it. I was a little surprised that maybe I shouldn't have been, but a little surprised that Zandon was favored, albeit ever slightly, you know, $1.35 to $1.45 over Mo Donegal. I just thought that, you know, the two races versus the one would have made Mo Donegal the favorite, but basically they were co-favorites. But yeah, I mean, on a regular day in a regular pool, $2,600 for that would have been probably deemed fine. On a day like this, when there was so much, free, you know, $700,000 free money and another 2.3 in the pool, I think people thought, nah, they might have gotten a little bit more. But look, I'm of the belief if you ever walk out of the track with more money than you came in with, it's a good day.
Yeah, and I have to think a lot of people have big smiles on their faces because I have to think they're potentially $40, $60, maybe $100 tickets that they walked away with almost $2,600. And to me, that's also good for the game as compared to these $80,000 or $100,000 because I think the $2,600 is going right back into the pools over the next few weeks. And so, again, I'm just happy when that winds up on these kind of carryover days or mandatory days. Dave, as always, really appreciate the conversation. Fun to talk to you, and certainly we'll check in again over the winter down at Aqueduct. But have a great day.
Thanks, Seth, and happy holidays to you and everybody upstate.
Appreciate it. Dave Grenig, the New York correspondent for the Daily Racing Forum on the really nice day down at Aqueduct to put a nice exclamation point on the racing season with the last grade one of the year, the Cigar Mile down at Aqueduct. All right, from my TV up on the wall there, I see they've kicked off the pregame show. Again, we have an 11:50 post time at Aqueduct today. So Greg Wolf and Anthony Stabile in talking a little pregame. So we'll send it over to them so you can hear their thoughts on the card this afternoon. I will be back in an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll take a look at some Aqueduct and some Oaklawn and more on this Sunday afternoon OTB Live. Were you guys telling me something? They wanted me to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. You always have to thank the sponsors. Their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events during the championship meet. So again, thanks to Gulfstream Park for their participation. Underway now, the championship meet. Oh, and I will once again alert folks. If you play Maryland Racing, Laurel took the weekend off. So again, if you didn't see it yesterday, you didn't see it today, you don't see it today, and you play Maryland Racing, and I think we all love Laurel, they had some breakdowns about within the last week and a half or so, and the comment was that when the weather got cold, this new track surface changed up a little bit, so they're just taking a look and trying to make everything as safe as possible. So again, there's no Laurel Racing again today is the upshot of that, and I just, for folks who kind of, gee, I normally play Laurel, where are they? That's the situation this weekend at Laurel. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.